So I left my iPad at home this morning. So I'll have to go old school. It's been a while. I don't know. We'll see if it works. So how many of you remember what the shortest verse in the Bible is? Great Sunday school question, right? Now, the NRSV has extended that to Jesus began to weep. But it's still pretty short. And the funny thing about it is that it's lost in the middle of one of the lengthiest stories in our Bibles. So our text for this morning is from John chapter 11, verses 1 through 45. Here we go. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair. Her brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus. Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Accordingly, though, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. After having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then, after this, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. The disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Jews were just now trying to stone you, and are you going there again? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble, because they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble because the light is not in them. After saying this, he told them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him. The disciples said to him, Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right. Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought that he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him. Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him. When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary stayed home. Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world. When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, the teacher is here and is calling for you. And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The Jews who were with her in the house consoling her saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came to Jesus, to where Jesus was, and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in cloth. Jesus said to him, "Unbind him and let him go." Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and seen what Jesus did, believed in him. So there's likely many of us, there's likely not many of us who haven't been touched by the death of someone we love or care about, right? In fact, death is the one thing that we all have in common, that eventually, one day, young or old, aware or not, we will make that journey into the great unknown, the real final frontier. But more often than not, it's the death of another that interrupts our lives with sorrow and pain and grief and things that can be almost devastating. Now, if you've ever been to a funeral that I've officiated, you've probably heard me include this poem by Mark Morrison Reed, entitled "Let Me Die Laughing." Reed writes, "We are all dying, our lives always moving toward completion. We need to learn to live with death and to understand that death is not the worst of all events. We need to fear not death, but life. Empty lives, loveless lives, lives that do not build upon the gifts that each of us have been given. Lives that are like living deaths. Lives which we never take the time to savor and appreciate. Lives in which we never pause to breathe deeply. What we need to fear is not death, but squandering the lives we have been miraculously given. So let me die laughing, savoring one of life's crazy moments. Let me die holding the hand of one I loved and recalling that I tried to love and was loved in return. Let me die remembering that life has been good and I did what I could. But today, just remind me that I am dying so that I can live, savor, and love with all my heart. As the synoptic gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, tell the story of Jesus' life, it's the disruption of the money changers in the temple, and consequently the temple economic structure, but it's these things that turn the temple authorities against Jesus and lead ultimately to his crucifixion. In John's gospel, however, it's the raising of Lazarus that puts Jesus in the crosshairs of the temple authorities. Now, perhaps the raising of Lazarus revealed to the chief priests and Pharisees that the kingdom of God had come near, and they had no control over it. Perhaps the raising of Lazarus pointed to the Jewish eschatological belief that in the end, the graves would be open and corpses would emerge. But this Messiah who had raised Lazarus wasn't aligned with their religious agenda. Or perhaps the raising of Lazarus was a foreshadowing of Jesus' own death and resurrection that the temple elite were unable to see because of the darkness that had enveloped them. Regardless, not only does Jesus end up with a price on his head, but Lazarus does also. So the chief priests and the Pharisees can rebury, in a sense, any evidence that they've lost control over. Now, it's easy to get bogged down in the minutiae of the miracle, and it's not uncommon for us to question or even argue about something that can never be resolved. But I wonder if the reanimation of a corpse, even 4 days after death, might be an unnecessary diversion from what John is really trying to tell us. You see, on one hand, this is a story of deep compassion and care, as Jesus encounters not just the sorrow of his own disciples, but the incomparable grief expressed by Mary and Martha as he arrives in Bethany. We read, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and moved, deeply moved. And if we look at what this says in Greek, the word translated disturbed includes or implies a physical response of sorts, a visceral response, like groaning or murmuring. Have you ever been so distraught, so devastated, you can't do anything but groan? Murmur from deep within. I know I have. On the other hand, this is a story of moving from darkness into light. Perhaps you've heard people, or perhaps you yourself have said, in times of great distress, calling those times a darkness of sorts. That was the darkest time in my life, or that was a dark night of the soul. And so it's likely no surprise that John speaks of darkness and light using metaphors such as sorrow and happiness, blindness and sight, moving from the darkness of the tomb into the light of day. And of course, John's depiction of Jesus as the resurrection and life in opposition to death. So the disciples are called out of their confusion and into the light of understanding. Mary and Martha are called out of their dark despair and into the light of relief and release. The chief priests and Pharisees are called out of their blindness and lack of understanding and into the light of God's glory in Jesus. And Lazarus is called out of the darkness of death and into the light of life restoration. I believe Jesus calls us too, to step out of our darkness and in faith step into the light of God's love. But I don't believe that's something we do alone. Rather, stepping into the light of God's love is something we might carry alongside one another, that might come about as we walk alongside one another. After all, the disciples depended on Jesus, but they also depended on one another. Mary and Martha depended on Jesus, but they also depended on their community. Lazarus, well, nobody ever asked Lazarus if he wanted to be restored to life, but as a metaphor, Lazarus depicts for us the failure and inability of death to hold us in light of Jesus, who is the resurrection and the life. So while the story is about Lazarus' resurrection, it's also about our resurrection and the resurrection of others as we call one another out of death and into life. As followers of Jesus, resurrection and life are central to the meaning that we make for ourselves, that shapes our lives and our relationships, and often even our vocations. Resurrection and life confront us with the reality that those our world deems socially or physically or spiritually or even emotionally dead might live into a new reality. And resurrection and life reveal to us the lives of persons and communities bound by grave clothes of war or genocide or poverty or disease, that we might speak light and life into them. After all, resurrection demands something of us. When Jesus called Lazarus forth from the tomb, he urged those who were alive and well, unbind him and let him go. As resurrection people, we are to nurture and strengthen each other until we are able to walk on our own, or until the grave clothes of self-doubt, marginalization, or oppression are unbound, and the wrappings of fear, anxiety, loss, and grief are torn away. As resurrection people, we are invited to dream beyond the boundaries of life and death. As we stand at the tomb of suffering and despair, listening for the voice of Jesus, ready to unbind those God is delivering even now. And as resurrection people, we are called to imagine a world in which wholeness, shalom, well-being, health, and prosperity are normative expressions of human existence. In his book, The Five Invitations, Discovering What Death Can Teach Us About Living Fully, Frank Ostasevsky writes that we cannot be truly alive without maintaining an awareness of death. He says, death is not waiting for us at the end of a long road. Death is always with us in the marrow of every passing moment. But what Lazarus reminds us is that wherever death is near, so is resurrection. In the lives of the people and communities who deeply need God's presence in the very now of our existence.